True transparency.
True transparency. True transparency.
True transparency.
True transparency. True transparency.
Today's true.
All right. Welcome, everybody. True transparency. Today we're going to be talking about the Netflix documentary Wild Wild Country and how it relates to religion based on what we saw in the documentary. We're going to be speaking about how the Bhagwan amassed so many followers. There were a lot of people there. Where did they come from?
All right. Yeah, this is Yo.
This is T.
This is Now.
And this is Sid.
All right. What's going on today, fellas?
What's going on?
What's happening?
How's everybody's day so far?
It was good. I just smashed some crawfish. It was awesome. Nice. Good deal. So what's on the platform today, man?
Today we're going to be discussing a documentary on Netflix, partially, called Wild Wild Country. Have y'all seen it?
You talked about it for like the last couple weeks, and so I didn't get a chance to watch the entire thing, but I watched the first installment of the series.
And you're missing out. It's a great story. It has a wonderful plot. Just thinking about things we're going to talk about this evening, it builds to a point where you want to ask, how have I not heard, you know, of this one thing?
That's the biggest question I walked away from. This is going to be something that's going to make you think. So everyone, if you're listening, I suggest that you watch it, because it presents a lot of talking points, one of which we're going to talk today. But before we get into that, I'm just going to tell you a brief synopsis of what Wild Wild Country is about. No spoilers. I don't want to ruin anything for you because it's that gripping. But Seth, go ahead and start us off.
You know, basically it's just you ever seen one of those plots where a group of people want change and they want to do it differently, but they actually come together and they just really accomplish a huge goal bigger than themselves? And just to see that power behind a group of people and their intent to move forward as one unit, it was very deep. And that's pretty much what the story is about. It's just about a group of people doing what they want to do and, in all essence, government fucking them over, like, in a huge way.
There is a religious group that they're following in the documentary. They follow them from India over to the United States. Mm-hmm. They come with the intention of building a commune of over 100,000 people and making a city in the middle of Oregon where there's no crime, where people are focused and doing what they want to do, all following one man, Osho, or the Bhagwan, as he was called in there. And what makes the documentary so interesting and compelling is they start from their humble days where you meet Bhagwan and what he was standing for, what he was thinking about at the time in India, all the way to here and to the apex, to where we should know him, but no one understands where he is, where he came from, because everybody's watching like, why haven't I heard this? But that's the gist of what the documentary series is about, without giving anything away. We'll be giving small things away in this by the conversation, but if you look it up, you'll find it out anyway. No spoilers.
But slight spoilers. Here and there, a little dab.
We got to sprinkle some in. I'm sorry, people.
A little juice.
But it's history, so there's really no spoilers to history. You know how it ends.
Yeah. I mean, you should know the story, but it's surprising that you don't.
So what makes this so unique? What makes it such a compelling story? I mean, Yo and I were talking about it earlier, and I remember you said that it was coming up like on your timeline, social media.
Yeah.
And
so,
people talking about it. And had you not recommended it to us to watch, I don't know if it would have caught my eye. What do you think is making it catch so many people's eyes to get on timelines and different social media platforms and talk about that?
So when I first saw it, it was me and some friends kicking into my living room, and we were watching. We're just scrolling through Netflix trying to find something to watch. Netflix has now changed so you get a trailer every time you see something new just to see what it's about. And this is a Netflix documentary series, and they decided to change their trailers to, instead of being like something small and slow, to making it like a series. And so they gave you what happened in like a trailer form, like it was a story or a movie. And it was gripping. Like their trailer for it was deep. So I was like, oh, we got to watch it. And the videography and the way that they marketed it on Netflix made me watch it. And then after I watched the first episode, I was like, oh, man, I need to keep watching this. And we just moved through them quickly. It was easy to binge. So I think... Mm. Which is interesting that they're talking about the story now, is they marketed it in a way that would catch people if you like binge watching things on the weekend. Because it came out, I want to say, like that Saturday or that Friday, and I just started watching.
Yeah. And I think the thing that makes the story so compelling is they were thought of as a cult, right?
Yeah. They were thought of as a cult. No one in the documentary actually took the time to find out what they were about. No one asked those questions. And so the perception that came from the religious side was that they were a cult. And you see a lot of religious leaders stepping forward. But no one really came out and said, oh, this is what we believe. And the fact that there was so much opposition, it was a big deal that we never heard about, at least our generation. I don't know if anybody else outside of the people here have heard it.
Yeah, well, this took place in 1981. So that's when I was born. So I definitely...
never heard it.
Wasn't on my radar, no.
I wasn't here until 88, so I...
Oh, well, yeah, there you go, yeah.
Yeah, I ain't telling my age, but literally. Like, it's not something... Usually large cultic movements or something that impactful. What was the people that was drinking, like, the Kool-Aid?
Jonestown.
Yeah.
People's Temple.
Yeah. And so, like, literally, you hear about this.
Yeah.
Or at least you hear. You might not know all of the details, but you heard about it. Mm-hmm. So what was so unique about this particular instance or this particular movement that made it kind of hush-hush?
I would say because of just how close they got to actually accomplishing everything they wanted to do. From literally almost taking over a state, essentially.
Yeah.
Because you think about the land that's available out there, the way it's set up, that just the area around it, the physical location of it is perfect, where you can just build something out of the ground and take it over to where you affect the laws, you affect the roads, you affect everything about an entire state. You can almost take over. Just from a group of people working.
It was almost like they had their own like little Wakanda.
Yeah.
There, yeah. You know? Yeah. So to those who have no idea what we're talking about, these people came from India. They bought a piece of land in Oregon in a small town with a population of 40. And they came, bought a property that was 19 miles away from the city of Antelope, Oregon. And with that city, a commune first, they built a city. They made... a city called Rajneeshpuram, where they all worked. They lived there for quite some time, and there was no crime. It was a self-sustaining place. They had their own electricity grid. Mm-hmm. They made their own food. So they were a self-sustaining unit until they had to battle against the powers that be, and they made portions of their money that they've accumulated to buy out the city and then to push people out. And so that's the other part of the documentary series that was so gripping. They built a city from scratch. They built something amazing from scratch. And to see that, like you said, it was a little Wakanda. And it made me question why we haven't done a Wakanda-esque movement like that before. And as I watched it, it became apparent why that didn't work.
Yeah. So that group had a figurehead. All right. We'll get into more grouping. It seemed like they really had a figurehead, and then they had a power pusher behind it. But they had a figurehead. And when we were sitting down talking, talking about the documentary and what we thought, one of the questions that came up was, why was this dude so influential or so powerful? What was it about him?
Yeah.
That made people want to follow him, like move across the world.
Yeah, I want to know that. I only saw like 3/4 of the first episode, so... I'm not all the way deep in it, but immediately, I mean, this guy, like, what is it about him that had all these people worshiping him, you know?
Right. Say it the way you said it before. Like, he had, like, you know, bald head.
This was a bald Indian dude with a beard who was described as having on a white robe and another white thing and nothing else underneath it. And I know it's stereotypical, but you know, this is the Indian people, you know, they have their thing, you know, as far as smells and, you know, it's, I mean, so crazy. What is it about a dude
that was so like this magnetic would
draw you to worship him?
I think it's the time that was in, because you also got to think that's Woodstock time.
Yeah.
That's where that free love, that I want to, you know, explore other ways of thinking and being. Uh-huh. And so this dude in this otherworldly country has this thing going on that I just heard about. Like, hey, I got a little money to visit. Let's go.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So but why is people, why are people like that? Who worships somebody?
I don't think.
Other than Jesus.
No, so okay. We That's have to define question. What worship is. Okay. So is adoration worship?
Devotion. Adoration. Reverence.
So the master and teacher relationship in certain countries, right? It's devotion. So if I was in China and I decided to be a monk, a Shaolin monk, and I wanted to learn Shaolin, I would have an abbot who would be a master. He wouldn't be a person that I would worship, but I still have that devotion. So what separates adoration, at least in your opinion, from worship?
Fear.
Okay.
Oh, so which one are you saying is fearful? Adoration or worship?
I think fear is a part of worship.
What type of fear?
What does the Bible say? Fear is the beginning of wisdom? Knowing that there is a God.
But there are two types of fear.
An all-powerful God.
There are two types of fear. There's fear of, out of that type of fear you have with somebody because this person is going to kill me or I'm afraid of this person.
And then this person could kill you.
Right. But then that. But then there's this type of fear, what they talk about is they call the fear of the Lord. If you're talking from a Christian perspective,
yeah, of Lord,
saying
yeah.
that there is a reverence there. There is a thing of
exactly,
when you reverence. Walk in, it's kind of like when your parents walk in. Yeah, they can harm you, but you know they're not going to harm you because they love you. Yeah. It's the fear of the respect that I have that for too. Them.
Yeah.
So there's difference because they got mob bosses. It's not necessarily that you respect
all
them.
Incompetent.
It's literally, you going to kill me if I don't do this. And we're going to get into that later, but I think that plays a central role in just religion, period. But this point right here, what was it about this dude that made everybody kind of, what was he kicking or what was he putting out there?
Yeah, I don't know.
What was he putting out there that was just
only
like,
saw the first episode. I wasn't impressed.
That's why I said me. You said you weren't impressed.
I wasn't impressed.
You weren't impressed, but
it's not like he was up there singing and dancing. You know what I mean?
But he
it's,
had a.
It's what he said, though. That's what, like Sid said.
This what is was it really that deep?
Think about the time period. This is when New Age first started, right? When people were really, or at least white people, were really looking for a sense of self. They were trying to build and understand who they were right after the war, and they needed to find something. And so Osho came at a time where he was giving an answer that they had been seeking. What is wrong with me? Why do I always feel uncomfortable? He said, I'm not here to be God or Jesus. I'm not even here to be a son. I'm just here to wake you up. I'm here to give you purpose. And if you don't have a purpose or you're living a purposeless life, you will look to somebody who gives you that answer. And you'll get that kind of devotion if it rings true with you.
And another way spin he put on that was, it was whatever you wanted it to be, whatever you felt that devotion needed to be, whether it was sex, whether it was even capitalism, things you wouldn't normally hear a monk or a typical religious person profess. When it's like you want to have. You want to have an orgy? Do that. You want to worship money? Do that. You want to, whatever it is you feel you need to do to get to that perfect state of being, do that thing and let's work.
Yeah. So the thing that drew people was, oh man, I could do whatever I want to do.
It's I could do whatever I want to do, but I would be honest about who I am afterwards.
I don't have to hide.
Yeah, there was
doing
no
what
hiding.
I want to do. Because honestly, I guess based upon that, it was no penalty or no consequence for you doing what you did, right?
So the way that the Bhagwan or Osho, whichever one you choose to talk about, did his thing is he did this Kundalini yoga process where you would hyperventilate, you would start.
Yeah, I remember that.
Going through these phases, and at each phase, you were basically building yourself up to a point where you could explode. Mm-hmm. And then after the explosion, because you've given it everything that you've got, you are now in a quiet, more reflective place. And doing that, after a while, you kind of get through whatever shit you were dealing with, I guess. And so for them, they found peace in that. And so having a process that gives me peace, B, you telling me things that make a lot of sense, that hit some points that no other religion is talking about, and C, you allow me to make my own choices and be who I want to be. Oh, people by the busloads are coming to you because you are allowing them to be the image of whoever they want based on a solid process. We're going to agree to work together to accomplish this goal, and that's making a city of people who are going to be like you, and they're going to be awakened, whatever
awaken means.
Everybody wanted to be woke. So everyone came each morning with the intention of being woke and doing work. That's the other part about it that made me pause when I was watching it. Bhagwan had these rules about the commune. I don't want people just come and meditating. I want them to work. So these white people who were becoming from all the way from America to India to this middle of nowhere place got jobs. And he would make them like clean toilets. Degrading work to just say that you need to be selfless and actually do these things. So he was giving these people a piece of purpose. He was bringing them back down to earth and making them one with everyone else. He built a community, and a lot of these people weren't feeling like they belonged anywhere. Yeah. So that's how he did it. And if you could do that, I could see how people would look at you like, oh, you think you're Jesus.
Yeah.
Because that's what a Messiah would do.
According to you, or according to some people.
According to someone.
Okay. It's more or less the perspective.
Messianic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing about this enlightened, highly enlightened person, highly enlightened, I got to know what he knows, because he knows so much.
Like, dude, mad love. I just left the United States, came to India, and I am happy cleaning a toilet. I am happy doing basic domestic chores. I feel fulfilled. I feel happy and all that. And I couldn't get that where I had gobs of freedom, money, a job, different things. So you must be enlightened for me to feel this way. So that's what we're saying.
Yeah.
Like that's the reason, like, I feel better being around you. Why? Is it because I can be my true self and be okay with figuring out who I am and not feeling like if I find out who I am, you're going to be like, stop being that type of person.
Yeah.
But it also it eliminated even the possibility of that, though, because there's literally a boxed in city in a safe place where you can literally believe whatever you want to believe, however you want to believe it. But when you work through that, we have a goal in mind. Let's make this area of people who think that way, and let's expand it to make it an even larger safe space, I would say.
Interesting.
And because of the way that the religion recruited people, that vision was actualized by city planners, by botanists, by like the leading minds of the time. So if you were to hear about people, that, that's where the Wakanda aspect came in for me.
So how did they recruit people? How did they recruit people?
They didn't really go into great detail about that during the documentary, but I guess they were going after these people because they also don't feel like they belong. Mm-hmm. And especially during that time when everybody was war effort, if you were a person who was like, no, I want peace, you didn't feel like you belonged in the society anymore. So you would, of course, try to find something else that you could fit into.
But it does seem as though they were more strategic based on what you're saying, to be like, hey, I need a city planner because I plan on doing this. Go get a city planner. Hey, we need to do something and have agriculture. So I need to make sure I know people that know how to grow this type of stuff. So it wasn't just like, hey, we're trying to get everybody into this movement. No, we're very targeted in who we are going in and pursuing.
Yeah. Well, it could have been that those people were the first ones to catch that wave.
That's what they said. Yeah. They said it was both. If they were open to everyone, but they were really going after people who had skills.
They were strategic that they could cast a wide net and they would find out who is who within that whatever they pulled out of there.
Yeah. While they were in India,
a good screening process.
Yeah, she was Aman Sheila was saying that the people that were coming there, she realized that they have talents, they have skills. Mm-hmm. While you are here cleaning toilets, you also happen to know a lot about business and building banks. So they built infrastructures based on your skills while they were in India, which helped them later on when they moved out to Oregon, plan out, okay, who should we bring over and tell? Because they tried to smuggle, well, they didn't try, they smuggled their way out of India. And in order to do it, she told her team of like, I'd say 20-something people.
They got them out like nobody knew what was going on.
No one knew.
Nobody knew.
Because they knew if someone knew, it was going to mess things up, which goes to another level, which speaks to what I would really like us to get to is what were they doing that is so different from every other religion?
That's what I was just going to say. I was like, we like to use the terminology cultish, or was it different? the thing is, come cult, on now, you say cult and everybody goes, but I'm just saying, when you think about certain religions today, just think about it. When I was at LSU, my professor told me this story. He was like, the things that we believe as Christians make such great sense to us because we've been believing them since the day we were birthed.
Core beliefs.
Literally, think about it. We believed a woman never had sex.
Imagine.
And she got pregnant by the Spirit of God that just alone came down and just said, I've chose you to be the mother of God. Bam, you're going to have a baby.
Lineage of Abraham.
Right. But just think about it. We take this stuff for granted. We say, look, I know you got a dude who's trying to marry you. Uh-huh. Okay. Just imagine what fellas. Can I get all of my fellas? Yeah. You date. Okay. Y'all got women. Yo, you married.
Yes.
Okay. You're married.
Uh-huh.
If wifey come down and be like, look, you
better be the Spirit of God.
But I'm just saying, if your girl come to you and be like, look, God told me I was going to be the one to bring the saving to the world. You got to imagine, Joseph was probably like, well hold on one second.
Hold up.
Hold on. But
angel of the Lord visited Joseph though, right?
I mean, but the thing is, this is what we believe.
He needed
this. This is what our faith tells us, right?
Yeah.
But this is what our faith is supposed to tell us if you're a Christian. This is what you believe. Now imagine nobody's heard this story their entire life. Their entire life. Maybe you grew up Hindu. Maybe you grew up, Hindus, anywhere else. Something else. Now, we might look at them and go, oh, that's cultic. That's ridiculous. That is unimaginable. Can't imagine. And then they probably looking at us going, that sounds like the most foolish stuff that I have ever heard in my life. Yeah, and then you have
it's a hard sell.
And then you have the audacity to tell me what I'm saying is wrong. You sound like a fool, but we're so quick to pull up this thing that's cultic. Because the thing that you're telling me now, when y'all talking about this, it didn't sound like there was really cultish. It just sounded like they're different. We can't control you. Mm-hmm. And I don't like the fact that you are getting together for a common purpose. Same thing with Wakanda. Plug there is I don't like you having your own stuff that's governed by yourself. You said they didn't have no crime. You might have came in scrubbing a toilet, but then while you were scrubbing the toilet, they realized, hey, you're a skillful business person, or you can bill, or you can do that. That sounds like, hey, let me bring you in and figure out what you do well and then help you sharpen those skills so that we can talk about how you can contribute to society and building what we're trying to do, the common goal of building. And I don't like that, so I'm going to say that's different from what we're trying to do, so you're a cult.
So in the documentary, what made it so interesting to me wasn't that cult was used. It was when it was used.
Yeah.
So when they bought the property, they weren't a cult. When all these people came there and they built their own city, they weren't a cult. They became a cult the moment they tried to strike back at the people of the small town because they were angry at what they were doing with the space. So the people in town, they had an allegiance with Nike because the founder of Nike had a home there.
Yeah.
And using that money, that helped push that imagery. Because before it was just this group of people had a commune and people were comfortable with the commune. But the moment people went to the news and said, they're pushing us out, we're leaving our homes.
Mm-hmm.
That's when it became a cult. When we had to save the image. Because it'd be hard for me to feel bad about you selling your home to a group of people who are trying to develop the land. I don't care about that. Yeah. Oh, it's a cult that they worship Satan. Oh, we got to stop them. That's what stuck out to me immediately afterwards. Because at no point in what the followers were saying did they ever say anything that made me feel like, ooh, that's a little strange. The videos that they showed about their little Kundalini yoga practices were very strange. I'm not going to lie. I wouldn't have taken place. I would have chilled outside.
I'd have been like, I'm cool on
no,
that.
Thanks. Yeah, no, thanks. No. I don't believe that far.
wait. This is the... You're talking about
the yelling and screaming sessions?
You wouldn't participate
if I was
now?
There, I'd been like, nah, okay, I'm going to come back at the quiet part. I'm cool
back where we meditate. But everything's a little relaxed.
I mean, like, if we want to get real talk, modern day talk, the thing that they were doing sounds a hell of a lot like gentrification. Okay, it sounds like, hey, we want to buy up all this land. We want it to be the way that we want to be. We want the people that we want to live here. And so what we're going to do is buy up all of your property and kind of push you out of this. And if that was today, why can't we just say modern day builders and politicians and all of that are cultish? No, they're empowered. That's the problem. Yeah. They're empowered.
You know what's really funny to me as we're talking about this? I didn't want to go in this direction, but it fits in very well. What Bhagwan was giving to white people, you can call it culture, you can call it ethnicism, but he was teaching them to be black or Afrocentric, if you think about it.
Afrocentric?
Yeah.
I mean, the Indian dude taught the Caucasian people to be Afrocentric.
He was giving them Afrocentrism in his teachings, right? He was getting them to the point where they weren't so hot up on privilege. They were just people. Mm-hmm. And when you think about how African culture was, we had a functioning community system, right? Where we went after each other, but we did it in love. And at the end of the day, we all went home. We had a functioning system getting through things. We didn't have crime like that. And that's what he was giving them. And they loved it, and they came for miles and miles to get it because it gave them a sense of self. So Afrocentrism, sense of self, whatever you want to call it, low-key tangent. But if you think about it, they became Wakanda in the aspect that they have that Afrocentrism, they had a city that functioned, that worked, and people got mad because it was working. And, you know, when you think about us in this nation, we try to get some stuff together, and every time it started working, we got something taken away from us. We got bombings on Black Wall Street and all this other stuff. Like, sorry.
You just got killed.
Yeah. but I would say that the opposition that you feel from literally the United States government actually going against their own specific laws just to try to go against what this one group of people are doing, that alone, like,
they change the laws, you know. If they don't like how something's going, they just change the laws.
Not change them. Uh-huh. What they do, they stretch them, bend them, modify them just a little bit. Because the one thing that people do is, you know, we're not going to divert from what our forefathers have said. But what we'll do is we'll amend them. Why? Because we have to get in touch with culture. But back to the question that at hand is, how is this different from any major religion today? Think about the top three, let's say top five religions in the world right now.
Islam.
Christianity.
Buddhism.
Judaism, I guess.
Yeah. And Hinduism.
Hinduism. All right. Of those five, which one is probably the least violent?
Buddhism.
Buddhism and Hinduism? Hinduism, maybe?
Yeah, I guess.
Those two are the least violent. All right, so then that leaves three more, which you have what? Islam, and you have Christianity, and you have Judaism. All right. So you have those things, those five religions. What is so different about what these people were trying to do than how these major religions were set up in the world? Think about it.
They didn't kill enough people.
Yeah.
If you think about it, they are, if we could compare them to anyone, if we were to flip this. So the Rajneeshans are like the pilgrims. They came to a place, they took over. They killed the native people. Now, had they just killed these older white people living in this town, they'd be like Christianity.
Yeah, they smallpox them in a different way,
if you want to get very real, because when you think about establishing power and everything that's happened, every major religion, just think about it. How many people have been killed in the name of Christianity?
Too many to count.
I mean, Christianity has come in a whole lot.
A whole lot.
Literally, Christianity came in and destroyed whole places. in God's name.
Yeah.
How many people have been killed because of Islam?
I'm not going to say equal, but it's pretty close.
It's been a lot, huh?
It's been a lot. I mean, and then if you want to get really into it, if you're Jewish, read the Old Testament. And just literally, think about the Old Testament. Christians that read the Old Testament. How like much war and violence was just in, before you get to Matthew, how much did you experience just old school
war
days?
Is a part of life.
That's it. Like literally going in and but everything that I imagine is every major religion has conquered territory.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Every major religion has gone in, conquered the land, and put what they believed on that territory.
Manifest
Am I wrong?
Destiny. Manifest destiny in a sense, you know, taking over and you occupy the land, you take over the people, you destroy their way of understanding reality. You implement your own. You control that territory and you, I guess, collect revenue to keep yourself engulfed in your own belief, to where you have your walls, you're protected on all different fronts. It's like a dynasty. I mean, religion in itself is just a new type of dynasty, you know, the new monarchs, or really the old monarchs, because it's been going on.
Man, they've been doing this for a while.
A good while.
But when you think about it, so that's what I'm trying to figure out. Nobody's trying to hide Christianity. Of course you can't, because there's so many of them. Mm-hmm. All right. Nobody's trying to hide Islam. Nobody's trying to hide Hinduism, Buddhism.
By modernism, yeah. Get on and on.
That's saying where our Erykah Badu sits on the throne. No, I'm just saying. But literally, nobody's doing things or saying things that are wrong. I mean, if you want to call it, then every major religion has cultish behavior.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah.
Right?
Looking at the definitions of both, they go kind of hand in hand.
Just think about this. Most of us have had familiarity or at least exposure, whether we identify or not, with Christianity. Mm-hmm. Think about how Christianity got started. The major religion was what at the time?
Paganism.
Yeah.
All right. Now, where Jesus was coming up, what was the major religion where he was at? They were Jews.
Yeah.
Jewish.
Everybody was waiting for that Messiah. The thing is, that's the reason why they were called those that follow the way. You know, the people that meet in little homes, you know. The church started in little homes, and they met in this person's home and carried this person in that palm. I'm sorry, but in those days, that was probably figured out to be a sect or a cult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They differed.
Yeah.
They differed. They differed from the laws. I mean, they were doing crazy stuff like eating stuff on the Sabbath and picking stuff and, you know, guzzling wine and doing all kind of different things that other people didn't do. So they were cultish.
Meeting in the dark.
Yeah.
They had their own secret handshake.
He's so stupid.
No, I'm so serious. The sign of the fish? Did y'all not know this?
No.
Okay. So my dad is a pastor. And I used to ask him, why does everyone always have a fish on the back of their cars? And he was like, oh, that's the sign of the fish. So back in the days of the Romans, when Christianity was outlawed, to show someone that you were a Christian, you would go like this. You would do the upward oval, and they would do the downward one, and it would make the fish. And that's how you knew who was a Christian and who wasn't.
Oh, word.
That's cool. That's what's up. That was cool.
Yeah, so I was like, you know, that adds in. That's some really secret.
Just
stuff.
Imagine if you saw somebody doing society. Something today. That's like gang behavior.
Oh,
so
yes,
like throwing up your son. And I think the difference is we like what we like when it fits our agenda. When it doesn't fit our agenda, then we label it something else.
One of the things that I keep asking people is, based on what you saw, had they not come to America, do you think it would have worked out? Do you think that we would have looked at it as a cult if they took over a foreign place? By taking over, I mean they passively assimilated into their populace, or they became a political party, maybe.
I personally don't believe so, because it's the situation, like you said earlier, it's the situations of how they became to be known or spoken of as a cult that I don't think would have really mattered anywhere else. Because they were thought of as something that was scaring a way of life for a certain amount of people. And those people used every, you know, bit to go against them, just out of just pure hatred for a change of way of life. I don't think that threat or that kind of thinking goes on in a different country. You're like, all right, whatever, do what you got to do. Or either, you know, in different countries, they're going to murder you, or they're going to let you do what you do, and they're not going to care about it. So I guess the attention that you get from the actual feud itself kind of heightened the, I guess, intensity of it.
I thought it was really interesting that these devout Christians in the middle of Oregon, you would think they would be more open to certain things taking place, right?
Like what?
So one of the guys said initially when they first got there, the Rajanishas would tell you this is what we're doing here. They would have a conversation. Hey, they were trying to be good neighbors, as he said. Mm-hmm. They were talking to people. They were sharing, hey, we just want to be left alone to study our religion. Not that big of a deal. If somebody were to come up to you and be like, hey, I'm moving around next door. Hey, I do this because this is what I believe in. I happen to be a Mormon. I hope you're okay with that. You would probably be like, okay.
Do what you do.
Which is what they did. But when you started seeing the growth, these people immediately attached, oh, that's evil. They're doing something in those hills. And you just see the level of anger and pride that these people had in their town.
Because, I mean, to speak about their location helps present that to light. Because imagine where you are right now. This is where, you know, this different group of people who are hating on the Rajneeshpuram people, they have this difference. Now imagine they're 19 miles away. They're literally 19 miles away. That's almost like, that's about a 30-minute trip. Like, why are you even worried about something in that space over there that has nothing to do with you?
That's like the church next door.
Except once it grows and it starts to affect your way of thinking.
So what are you saying is you expected Christians to be a little bit more open to it?
I have.
What is it about devout Christians? The way that you put it is like, man, I expected these devout Christians to be a lot more open. Open to what? Like, what were they supposed to be open to? I understand what they would be fearful of, but what were they supposed to be open to?
If you are truly a Christian, I feel like devout Christian. If you are a truly devout Christian, that means that you follow and you understand certain principles. One, Jesus had a very get along, but don't disrespect me principle, right? There were other religious people around Jesus, and Jesus talked to you as a person.
Yeah.
Now, he corrected you as a person. He didn't say anything that was terrible to you or made you feel outright horrible. He had a way of revealing things to you.
Unless you were a Pharisee or a Sadducee.
They weren't true believers. He dealt with them in a way that they understood.
Unless you were a Gentile too, I mean,
no, he came to save.
He talked about the woman, about the bread.
But that was a test, man. That was a test, because the biggest thing is, because if it's the same,
disrespect me, like he tear up the, you know.
No, the thing is, that's the thing. He was not meek.
Yeah, okay? That's what I'm saying.
He wasn't meek, but the thing is, he was very open minded. He was very fearful to the powers be that time. Mm-hmm. That leads me to my next question: like, what role does power play in religion or in supposed Christianity, Islam, whatever? But what power? What power is important? Because the thing is, Jesus took on the powers that be, because no matter how we want to say, he was different.
Yeah.
He was different.
And very enlightened.
So let's go. And I'm not comparing Jesus to, oh boy, I can't remember his name, Roshna, Oshun, whatever.
We're just talking about these figures.
But it's about, what is it about these figures that become so magnetic?
Because
they're so, he's so stupid. Because they're just so different.
What was it about him?
Just think most popular pastors, okay? Most pastors are people that are different. Y'all think about, y'all saw the video, like, I watched Man Cave this past weekend. Y'all saw the video, like, the cussing pastor?
Yeah.
Right? That was the first time I had ever seen it. And I was like, what did that dude just say? Like, okay. But people in just get enamored by people that are different. Mm-hmm. Different, good or bad. No thing. Just people that bring along a little something different draw people. Now, what makes them stick has to be something. There has to be some kind of substance to make people stay. Mm-hmm. But literally, the dude had enough in the documentary to make people stay. And if he had not been overpowered by people that had more money and more influence than him, he could have probably made a whole bunch more people stay.
Yeah.
All right. The thing about Jesus is, if you believe in Jesus, the reason why people stay with Jesus was because he was all powerful. He had all the power. Nobody could overpower him. That's why people stay. But
he had the power.
But the thing is, though, they have people that think Muhammad got the power. They got people that think that Joseph Smith got the power. They have people that, even if you want to go from another sect of Islam down to the Nation of Islam, that Elijah Muhammad has the power. Yeah. You know, think about, man, everybody in here done seen the Denzel Washington movie, Malcolm X. Mm-hmm. When they talk about Malcolcolm X, now you said, you love the movie.
I love the movie. Malcolm X, talk about,
all time.
But you talk about seeing that transformation in that man and him saying that Elijah Muhammad appeared to him. And you know what I'm saying? Like, literally.
No. I got to pause you right there because I heard that's not actually in the book.
It is in a way, but he, not like he really appeared to him. He wrote him a letter. And in that letter, he said it was almost like he was right here reading it to me. It's not a.
So the scene in the movie is just like from the Alex Haley book. Because the movie is supposed to be from the Alex Haley autobiography of Malcolm X.
It is in most ways, but a lot of ways.
I know we're getting off topic.
The thing is power and religion. Yeah. So the lyric, you can talk about that because let's have a moment of clarity right here.
Yeah.
Just for everybody listening. We can all go around. Has anybody seen Jesus? Go.
No.
But we have faith.
Yes.
But we have not seen. So who am I to tell this guy who said, I felt this? Many times we talk about the spirit of God being with us or around us. We believe, if we touch and agree, that he's there with us, all kind of different things. Yeah. So for this dude to be like, I'm writing to this man who I adore, and I feel as though he is with me and his presence is with me. How do we say, this is what you need to do over here.
Yeah.
I think it has to be a
worship,
and it's a level of worship, but it's something different. And like when I say that it's something different, you feel something different when you participate in this one thing. You're like, something about this feels different, and I feel like I'm going in the right way.
Yeah,
like that. I don't know, you know, like it may. Maybe something.
It's a relationship.
It's a relationship.
But the thing is, though, what makes, so my biggest thing is, so you married,
Yes.
And he's the only married one for everybody. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you ever hang out with another married couple?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
So you might see another married couple do something or interact in a different way, and that's their thing, right?
That is them, yeah.
And you and your wife have different ways that y'all kind of conduct and interact. That's y'all relationship.
Yeah, we have us.
So how can you look at somebody else and say, but you should be doing what we're doing? And they like, nah, we good.
They touched on that in the documentary. When people found out about their familiar structures and how they had relationships, you didn't have to be married to have a family.
Yeah.
And the people in the town were asking about what they thought about that. Oh, it's not godly. You shouldn't do like that. And as you were talking to the Rajaneeshas about it, they said, your relationship is your relationship. Who are we to impose our standards and view on you? You do what you want if it makes you happy. And I think that's where the power came from. And that's why they were looked at in the way that they were. Because they took power away from the divine, immaculate something that they couldn't touch to something that just came down to you. What you decide is what your life will be like.
Yeah.
Versus having to appease some deity that we have never seen, that we were just told to believe in. They had a spiritual awakening just like we were when we got to the point that we decided to be Christians. So it's the same, but the difference is if we were Christians, back to the point I was trying to make earlier, if we were devout, we would let some things go. Okay, you don't believe what I believe. I can talk to you about it and hope that I can convert you, but if not, you know, do what you do. I can't do anything. Turn the other cheek.
I still love you if you don't believe what I believe.
Right. That's where we should be.
That's where we at. That's where we at. Because the thing is, what made this dude so different is, hey, I want you to open up your mind. Yeah. Think. Figure it out. Figure out what you believe. Do you realize when you think about evangelizing people, whether you be a Christian or Islam, basically it's saying you need to do what we need to do. You need to do it our way. And if you don't do it our way, you're not accepted in our way of life. Not as, hey, I'm going to expose you to this. Hey, let me just show you Jesus. Because most times, most of us have different experiences when it's come to church. I've had a very long and deep experience when it comes to the church because I grew up in Catholicism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so did I.
Very structured. Yes. Very traditional. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of feeling, okay? You go in, you genuflect, you hear this word, you follow a routine mm-hmm. of the same thing. Yeah. Just think about it. You know what's about to happen next.
Call and response type situation.
So that was
get down on the knees.
Right. That's very different.
Yeah. Holy water.
And I'll be very honest. It really wasn't about relationship. It was about the fact that this is what I've been doing since birth. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is what they say I got to do when I get up on Sundays. I could do it at 7:30, 9:30, or 11:30, but I got to do it at some point. Mm-hmm. It's not because I absolutely need it. Then it got to a point where people were like, are you sure that you're going to go to heaven or hell?
All right, so we hit the 46-minute mark. I didn't mean to interrupt.
But we said between 45 and
45 right. and 60. Yeah, that's where we are. Okay, cool.
And so literally, like, you know, you got a power struggle going on here. Mm-hmm. But even when you just think about most religion today is based out of fear, not a relationship, yo. It's based out of fear. Don't go here.
So it goes back
here.
To what I said about fear.
Yeah. Most religions.
But it's also a relationship.
It's fear.
But it's a fearful relationship.
No, it's not a fear. It's like, okay, said.
But
said
I'm in a relationship with you.
You're in you in some type of relationship with me. I'm in relationship with my boss.
Yeah.
Sometimes I do what they say because they can fire
That's
me.
That's the relationship.
Doesn't mean that I like, you know,
different
things. Like, think about that. If you hate your job, you hate working, but somebody says, keep going there, keep doing what you're supposed to do because they have power over you and they can fire you. Not because you respect them, not because you honor who they are, not because you're like, I wouldn't rather do anything else. But then that's the opposite of what Jesus is saying. Jesus is about to say, hey, I tore this veil so that you can love. Like, the one way that you're going to know my people is by their love. Period. Mm-hmm. He says, my biggest objective is to show you what love is. And literally makes a whole chapter about love and of faith and hope and love. The only thing that will remain is love. Yet the premise of all of our relationships is fear.
Yeah, but what I want to get into is it's a fear of this person not loving me anymore. To get so out of favor with this person that they don't love me anymore. Mm-hmm. That's the fear.
Now, that's different. That's different. No, but I don't think that's the thing. But I don't. Yeah. But depending on how you preach that, that's the difference between genuine sincerity and a obligation towards someone. Think about it. When you marry someone, if you have such a love for them that you love their presence.
Yeah.
You love who they are.
You don't want to be without that.
And if you mess up. Yeah. And you say, oh, my God, I'm in jeopardy of losing that person.
Yeah.
That's a different type of love than they not go let me in type of love.
Yeah.
Like, damn, I don't really care about them, but I'm not trying to die. Yeah. Uh-huh. That's different types of love. No matter how you want to see it.
Oh, no, that right
gets
there.
A different type of. But
that's
think
a
about
forced
it.
Relationship.
Right. And that's what we're saying. What is the
that's
role?
That's captivity.
Boom, I set you free so you can be free indeed. Yeah. So what type of role is religion
but
actually playing?
You wanted that freedom. You want that freedom.
You want it. But if I'm
you
not,
need that freedom.
But the point is, if I'm a shepherd and I'm teaching you, I'm not teaching you to honor me, message. I'm not teaching you to throw ceremonies and honor me, message. I'm not teaching you to bow down before me and not question anything that I say, message. I'm teaching you, hey, go here. Because once you fall so in love with this person, I can relinquish my hand. I don't have to be there with you every single day. Just let me grab your hand so I can show you how to get to this love that I've found.
And I think it also identifies love, like as from a Christian point, like you said, you know me by my people. You know that person by that love, and not having that love is that is that fear or that reverence. You know, you want the, you want to feel that in within the Christian sect, you always want to feel that almost like a child father reverence. Like I want to please my father. I want to please my mother.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. this is another concept I think Osho kind of what attracted people to him. It was like, I'm not putting any stipulations on whatever it is. If it's love, okay, cool. If it's capitalism, okay, cool. If it's building, if it's, you know, drinking it all day, if it's walking in the trees, if it's meditating, whatever it is, we come to this let's make an area where this is safe doing, where this area is safe for anyone to come here, do this thing, and do it together on one accord.
How did he get that power to call those shots, though? Why are people giving him power over them to call those shots?
Why do pastors get the call? Why do tens of thousands of people go to a church every single week and listen to whatever they say? And literally, they can literally move masses of people. Think about that.
Yeah.
Collect a lot of money from them.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, they listen to them.
They talk about it in the documentary that people who heard him were stoned after these talks. And if you think about it, when you go to church and you have a truly excellent experience and you feel the spirit, you feel a little stoned afterwards, because whatever that person said or however you got discourse with God, it's tiring. And you feel that. And he said, his lawyer, Osho's lawyer, said that people at these talks would get up and they would fall over. They would be moving. They would be shaky. Right?
Like, so evangelical Christian, right?
It's tapping into, outside of religion, your feelings. Something that he said is being channeled through him to you, and it's creating something. And as I'm sitting here thinking about it, what he did is make Christianity in its true, simple form, how it should be, taking out God, not taking out God from Christianity, but taking out the Son aspect of it. Let's assume that had we not had this conversation and said it was a cult or that they focused on one thing, if I just gave you, this is the setting, this is what they were able to accomplish, you would probably be like, oh, they sound like Christians.
Mm-hmm.
No, most Christians today, let's just be real, they would be like, that was demons flowing through them.
No, take out.
No, literally, they would be like, God would never make you do stuff like that. You would never just be like in a trance. But then you go to some services and you see some stuff and you like, ooh, my first time at an evangelical church, I was scared. I'm not lying. I was like, what is going on? Like, literally screaming, tongues, fainting. Oh my God. Like, keep in mind, I came from Catholicism. Very calm. Very.
I've done the same thing.
And you go there and you like, oh Lord, they took off running. Oh my God. Why should I start running too? Is somebody in trouble? Like, you really, but we've learned it.
Down South Georgia.
Wow.
And it's become so normal to us.
Praise those snakes.
Anything that's
not just
different.
That, but the tongues too.
Yeah.
The tongues.
Imagine you knew and you don't know anything.
Speaking
and you
in
walk
tongues.
In and like third, even though the Bible says you shouldn't do that. Just checking if you want. The Bible says when you shouldn't do that. That is for your time, but it is what it is. But literally, imagine how impactful that is to somebody that comes in and says that. And so, but the thing is, it's something that you've gotten used to.
Very true.
We've gotten used to the power structure. We have. We've gotten used to being absolutely. Like, you get up and go to church. If you don't go to church, you going to hell. You forsaking the meeting of the saints. You're going to go straight to hell.
Do not pass go. Do That's not
straight to hell.
You don't do this. Me and yo shut up here and argue for like an hour last week about gospel music, you know? And like, I was like, I'm not a fan of it. Like,
I don't know what you're listening to.
You think gospel music is going too far?
Nah, I'm just saying, I'm not saying I'm not a fan. I don't like wake up going, I gotta get that. If I find a good song, there's some gospel artists that I really like.
Yeah.
But I don't listen to it regularly. I have a diverse group of music that I, you know, that I get in. There's some people that that's secular. I'd be like, I could never listen to that trash. Yeah. I'd be like, just because the music quality in itself is trash. See, this is the problem that don't nobody want to do. Why? Because if I say something about a Christian doing something, I'm saying something about God. That is wrong. That is not right. So I made a song about God. Well, you know, it was kind of a trash song. Now, the content was good, but the your song was trash.
Like, unless literally, you're white.
Or, oh my God, did you just say? I mean, the song was trash. I appreciate what they were trying to say. They have a lot of people in secular world. They have a nice message. The song is trash. That's why it don't sell. It's garbage. But you can't say that because then they'll be like, oh no, you're talking about God. I never said God was trash. I said your song was trash.
And, even the concept of you thinking I said your song is trash and you think I'm attacking God. So are you God? Like, is that what you're...
No, because it's a power structure.
Well, it's also... Well, it's a lot of things.
But all in all, it's all about power.
Yeah.
No matter what it is. The documentary was about power.
Mm-hmm.
Religion today is about power.
Power.
It's supposed to be about God's power, but we make it about a lot of other things.
Yeah.
Something to think about. Just something to think about. Don't be so quick to label. Label things without really, really doing what we say on the present, like pretty much the premise of this show. Man, just hear people out. Figure out where they're coming from. That could do a lot more for your ministry than you think it could. For just your understanding. Hear them out.
You don't have to accept what they say, but you should always try to seek understanding in all that do. Boom. Yeah. Link it to the Bible.
Just love the other person. Jeez. Respect them to do whatever they do. Just love them.
That's the only commandment, really. That's the only commandment. Yeah. Love one another like I've loved you. That's what Jesus told us to do.
If life could really be that simple, yo.
Yeah. It's not. That's the thing.
The thing is, God is trying to make it that simple. We making it a whole lot complicated than it have to be.
If it was all so simple, you know, what a different life we would be living.
Yeah.
But we can all start with one thing, just hearing people out and trying to see things from everybody's perspective. When we become closed-minded, love is not possible.
And remember that anything that you hold to be an absolute truth, if somebody comes to you with something that's different, you do not have to abandon what you believe just because somebody said something. Hear them out.
That is the truth. If you are that threatened by someone bringing something there, chances are your core beliefs aren't strongly rooted in faith, more in traditionalism. But that's all I got to say about that.
You may not agree, but hear us out.